We're only human, and we all know how hard it is to forgive someone. Think about doing so after a tragic event. Some might find forgiving an easy thing to do, while others, perhaps most of us, might seek revenge. Our next guest,
Buck Blodgett, executive director of the Love is Greater Than Hate Project,
which he founded after his daughter was murdered in her home by a friend. It's an effort to end male violence against women. So, so important. Dr. Blodgett, I'm glad you've taken the time to join us today on Del Aware.
Thanks for having me on your show, Andrew.
Well, before we get into really the crux of this conversation, which is, would you seek revenge or offer forgiveness if a loved one was murdered or hurt badly? Why don't you tell us a little bit about your daughter, Jessie?
I don't know how I can possibly sum Jessie up in a short answer, but she, and you're hearing from her dad, but she was amazing and smart and talented, musically talented, very social. But the coolest thing about Jessie for me was she was really mission-driven, and I watched her social conscience kind of start to blossom and explode in sixth grade, and she had a series of causes as she went through life, and ironically, her last and biggest cause in life was male-on-female violence.
And it obviously had a very personal effect, because this was someone she knew.
You know, she tried to tell me about male and female violence, and I listened. We used to walk and talk every day around the block, my favorite part of the day. And, you know, I listened, but I didn't get it until it hit my family. And it's so personal now. But, you know, if Jessie was one in a million, I wouldn't be on your show today. I'd be watching ESPN or doing something else. But she's not. She taught me that she's one out of three. One out of three of our girls and women will experience some form of sexual assault in their lifetime, and one out of four domestic violence, and one out of six of our boys sexual assault, one out of seven domestic violence, and 10 more Jessies every day, 10 girls or women killed by a man in just our country today, tomorrow, and every day until something changes.
I think it's gotten a little more attention because of this Me Too movement, but you really do put it in its proper perspective. It's always been there. Many people who suffer personal tragedies don't want to talk about it. And you not only talk about it, but you've turned it into a mission. Why? Is that just because you want to continue that legacy of Jessie, or because it was so profound?
Both. That's really how it started. Jessie talked about it, and it was her mission. And I just had to pick it up when it happened to her and hit my family. You know, if the dad of a murdered girl can't get and stay motivated to do something about this issue and take it on, who can? I feel like I owe it to Jessie. I feel like I owe it to, it's too late for Jessie, but it's not too late for millions of our girls and women everywhere, all over the planet. And I owe it to them. I feel like we all owe it to them.
What has the Love is Greater Than Hate Project, and for our listeners, it's LIGTH.org. What has it done specifically to combat this problem?
It just started by me doing presentations, because I just had to share Jessie's story. I just had to, and her mission, and her messages of ending male and female violence. And it's, we have a dual mission. The second half of it is even better and more important, in my opinion, and it's to inspire people to choose love over hate. So it started by, I've now done over 100 presentations for 13,000 people in six states. In the last 2 years, we've really focused on the Wisconsin state prison system, which has become my favorite thing to do, and I never would have dreamed that before. But we do a lot of media outreach. We have a live radio campaign, and that's why I'm on your show today, and we have a print campaign that will reach over 2 million in the next few months, and we have four made-for-TV documentaries, including Dateline, that have been seen by many tens of millions of people on five continents. And the expansion of the project has blown me away, but also made me realize, you know, I was never in demand as an interviewer or a speaker in the first 53 years of my life. And it's made me realize how this issue is so important to so many people. Not one in a million, but one out of three. It's everywhere. It's time right now. This was never a national conversation in my lifetime until just a few years ago, and now it's one of the hot conversations, and it's in our politics. It's everywhere. This issue is everywhere, and everybody knows somebody who's suffered some form of sexual or physical violence, whether you know it or not, because most of them never say anything. But, you know, there's a huge impact on our world by this, and we've got to do something about it. It's time.
And you mentioned Dateline. I remember first learning of Jesse's story by watching that program. And I remember, and this is a compliment to you and Jesse's mother, I remember being struck by the sensibilities of you both. It was evident. It jumped out off the screen. How is it important for fathers to model behavior of how to treat women?
It's critically important. We know we've got a ton of data on this now for decades. And we know that children who grow up in environments, in their family unit, when they witness physical and sexual violence, they're way more statistically likely to commit it when they grow up and have families of their own. And even in a peaceful home, in the same way that parents set the bar and set the expectation for grades and for values, for work ethic and for homework, in the same way, whether it's consciously or unconsciously, so do they set the bar for how boys treat girls. My next birthday is going to be my 60th. And thank you for saying how sensible I sound. You just don't know me well enough, probably, yet. I must have done well on Dateline. But, you know, my generation, dads rarely talk with their boys directly about how a man treats his wife, about how a man treats his daughters, and in general, girls and women. And we have to start doing that. What father-son conversation in today's world in 2019 is more important than that one?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. I'm joined right now by Dr. Buck Blodgett. He's the author of A Message from Jesse. He's the founder of the Love is Greater Than Hate Project. He and his wife, Joy, were the parents of Jesse, who was murdered when she was 19. This book is the incredible true story of murder and miracles in the heartland. I want to pivot here a little bit. You forgave your daughter's killer. How were you able to do that?
Oh, boy. Hard to say in a quick answer. For the record, I was an atheist when this happened to me, to Jesse, and to our whole family and to our whole town, and I'm not now. And I feel like forgiveness didn't come so much from me, but rather to me and for me and through me. And that's just my truth, so I just have to say it.
Mm-hmm.
How was I able to? It's a choice. It's just a choice. Forgiveness is simple. I get this question all the time wherever I go. Forgiveness is simple. It's not easy. Two completely different things, simple and easy, but it's simple. It's just a choice. It's like chocolate or vanilla. You know, are you going to meet violence with violence or with peace? Chocolate or vanilla? Are you going to meet hate with more hate, or are you going to meet hate with love? Somebody's got to break the cycle, and it's just a choice, and it's just a daily practice of living that choice and committing to that.
Jesse knew her killer. I presume you did as well.
Yes, he was a friend of hers. He was welcome in her home. They sat right next to each other, first and second chair in orchestra for 4 years in high school.
Wow. And some might say, well, that's why you could forgive him so easy. But I would suggest that perhaps makes it even harder, doesn't it?
Yeah, you know, forgiveness isn't circumstance-based, and it's not a feeling. And, you know, a lot of times people say, it's amazing that you could do that, and but I never could and I never would. And to me, I want to rattle a skull and say, you missed the point. Anybody can and everybody should. My forgiveness for Dan is not based on any circumstances, how well we knew him, how well we didn't know him. If he ever admitted what he did, which he still hasn't 6 years and 14 days later, if he ever apologized to Joy or to Jesse or showed real remorse, none of those things have happened. Forgiveness, to me, is from a higher place than that. I choose it to be unconditional. And I want to be crystal clear, because I know half your listeners think I'm nuts right now. Forgiveness and excusing something are two completely different phenomena also. I will never excuse Dan for what he did to Jesse. Mm-hmm. I'll never excuse any human for their violence against another human or even an animal, especially if there's a power imbalance, ever. But that doesn't mean I can't forgive, and that doesn't mean I can't love.
Yeah, that's a critical distinction. I'm glad you made it. Back to the Love is Greater Than Hate project and its mission. Why do you think violence against women continues to be propagated, really? Is it perhaps lenient sentences contributing to the problem, or what is it? Or is it just that we have been tone deaf?
There's a couple big questions in there, and a good observation, too. tone deaf, but also not only tone deaf, there's a shroud of silence. We haven't even had the chance to hear about this until recent years so much. I don't know why. I don't think anybody knows why. This is in us. People say Dan's a monster. I don't believe that. I believe Dan is like everybody else. But the difference was he let himself entertain a series of choices and go further and further and further down a darker path and fantasize about it and watch snuff films and computer things until he acted it out himself. But, you know, I watched The Animal Planet last year and I saw 100 male frogs swarm a female frog in an intense desire to breed, and they killed her. And I don't think any of us would call frogs monsters. I think we'd call that nature and biology, and I believe that that's in us also. But what's also in us humans is a higher level of consciousness and choice, and therefore a higher level of self-responsibility to overcome our urges and bring light into this world instead of darkness and transcend our biology. As far as lenient sentencing, really important to me. I'm a chiropractor. I got two patients just this week who both told me their stories from the 60s when they were badly beaten by their husbands. And they had really similar stories. They both called the police. Police came, basically told them, sorry, there's nothing we can do, and it's a family matter, and released them back to the person, to their husband, who beat them so much that they called police for protection because they feared for their lives. Police would never do that now. Times have changed. Times do change, and this is changing slowly, this issue. But the message, imagine the message that's sent to those young women. If a judge sentences a rapist to 6 years of community service, what message are we sending to our daughters and our spouses and our moms about how much we care, how hard we're willing to fight to protect them, and how little we understand their lifelong impact of this trauma?
Wow. Very, very profound statement. Dr. Blodgett, I really appreciate you taking some time to share your story yet again with our audience. It's opened a lot of eyes, I'm sure, mine included. Really appreciate your time today.
I hope so, Andrew. If we talked and nobody changes anything, then it was a waste of time. I hope people put love and forgiveness in action. Thank you so much for having me and Jesse on your show.